Hosting the barn on Thanksgiving Day, the 30th of November, 1916. She was the last of the 9 daughters that was born to Dale and Gertrude Jarbo. One night I remember Brenda and I had gone to a dance, country dance over in Andotanoga Jeans at Christmas week, and we came home, Papa was setting up, trying to take care of her. She was crying, and so we told him to go on to bed and burn it and I'd take care of her then. In the year 1917 and 18, I took my first year high school at the Wright School, the country school. They taught the 9th grade then at that time. In the country, we were 12 miles from Shawbana, probably 20 miles from Monroe City. These kids that lived, they were too far to ride horseback to school, they had rented rooms and did light housekeeping. Then went home on weekends. 1918-19 term, I started School of Rosary in Monroe City. I also went in 1919-1920. The first year I went to Monroe, I lived with the Saunders kids, Edna, Lucy, and Ernie. And we had one room and a long closet. And we had an iron coal-burning cook stove, table and chairs, and 2 beds. One was a trundle bed. We were quite happy. Cousin Annie and Harry Saunders, their parents, came after them on weekends, or they went home on the train. I quite often went with them. If not, I went to Aunt Agnes and Amanda's. The second year at Old Rosary, Anna Lou and I had 2 rooms across the street from Aunt Agnes and Aunt Amanda, where we had an iron cook stove also, coal burning, and was upstairs, and we had to carry the coal up and the ashes down, as well as the water up and down, and the slop bucket down, and empty it in the garden. If the fire went out in the old cook stove, we had quite a time getting it started. And Lou studied a big pile of books. I wasn't a bookworm. She would go to Mass every morning at the chapel where the nuns the chapel was at the nun's house. She'd go at 5 a.m. I think she studied until about midnight, then put the alarm clock in a wash pan at the head of our bed to awaken her in time to go to Mass. That old clock in that pan would awaken the dead. It was from there that I spent my last days of school. In February 1920, I took the measles on my 18th birthday, and when I went to a leap year dance we girls had given the boys, that was when I was exposed to the measles and contacted the germ, and when time came for the germ to take over, I had gone home with Edna up to Lakeland, and on Friday night and all day Saturday, I knew I had fever, but we ran through the briars and we ran through the bushes, all kind of games, and it was so damp and foggy that I couldn't lose a day when we had a chance to have some fun. By Sunday, I was quite sick, and Otis was coming, so Edna's sister, Mamie, told Otis he'd better take me home, as she figured I was taking the measles. I was very ill in bed with a high fever, 102, 104, with abscesses in both ears, and the doctor came every other day to lance the abscesses, and there was no Sulfadrug or penicillin those days. For 8 weeks, this went on, and it rained and it rained. By about the 10th of April, I developed double mastoid, and Dr. Wilson from Southville had a specialist come from Hannibal. He was Dr. U.S. Smith. He came up on the train, and Dr. Wilson brought him out in a one-horse cart, 8 miles to our home. The water was so high, and I think it rained on them all the way. It was a night they got there. No top on the cart. Dr. U.S. Smith told my parents that I was very ill and was apt not to live through the night or through the surgery, but to bring me the next day to the hospital in Hannibal, the St. Elizabeth. And he would operate. The next day the rain came down in buckets and they put it off until the next day, being busy that day making me new white nightgowns and steak. And on the third day, the neighbor came with a spring wagon so they could take me in a cot. And my father sat at the end of the spring wagon and by me. They had me all wrapped up so I wouldn't get cold. Even had a hot water bottle in there. When I got to the depot at Stoutsville, it was I was wringing wet with perspiration. Dr. Wilson was there to meet us and Mom and Papa and me. When he found I was wet with sweat, he had to come out of all those covers. He looked like he knew then I would never make it. The train came, and we got on. When he had stopped in Monroe City, a whole bunch of girls came from school, and I got to talk and wave at them through the window. We waved and smiled. I carried that joyful moment through my serious ailment. And Agnes Reed also got on the train and went to the hospital. When we got to Hannibal Depot, we got a taxi, which took us to St. Elizabeth Hospital. It was quite small then, but it looked so big to me. This was 1920. It had been built in 1915. By the way, I hadn't been able to hear since illness took over, except when they talked real loud and real close to me. I was taken to my little room, and they prepared me for mastoid surgery the next morning. That was April the 13th. That evening before, when a nun came in to get my record, I couldn't remember my name or my birthday. I was that near dead, I guess. Dr. Smith had to whittle out those mastoid bones, which were like honeycomb. But they had been destroyed by the pus from the abscesses. They had to cut my hair all around my ear, but left the long braid and folded it back and forth across the back of my head. And I had huge dressings on each side of my head. And I had to lay on my back on those braids, and it felt like a log chain. Afterwards, all my hair came out, the roots and all. But anyway, no one thought I could live, but here I am on March 1984, 82 years old.
Going with him when?
She started going in the summer of 1919. I was 17. This is my life after I started courting Otis Buckman. Outside of going by his childhood house when we first came back from North Dakota, I had never met him. Until one night at a dance at Lakeland Hall, Irene Saunders, who later married his brother Julius, was sitting between the two of us along the dance hall wall. I said to Irene, "Who is that boy on the other side of you?" She said, "Oh, that is the Honorable Mr. Buckman." Then she introduced us. He quickly turned his head towards me and said hi, and with a very quick jerk turned back. I thought, well, if you ask me, he is Mr. Stuckup. Stuckup is all I could think. But I looked at his profile, and it was very nice. But I was sure I liked his brother Ben, who wasn't good looking, but had danced with me and was friendly and a lot of fun. Later on, I figured out he wasn't Stuckup at all, just shy, very shy. Later on that summer, 1919, I had gone to a picnic at Mr. John and Miss Annie Hardy's, And all day we young people sit around laughing and singing songs. Those days we had to make our own music. No radio or no TV. Just had to make our own entertainment. Otis Buckman was there. But being shy, I thought stuck up, set sort of back of us, like he thought we were silly. Anyway, that's what I thought he was thinking. As we were leaving to go home, he came up to me and asked for a date to go to Lakeland to an ice cream social. That gave me the surprise of my life. This was 1919 and I was 17. I told him I would go. That week I was visiting at Cousin Annie and Cousin Will Kendrick's, where I often visited because they had Charles and Ted, who are about my age. Aunt Lou and I often visited there. We had no brothers and they had no sister except an older sister who was married. Cousin Annie was my father's first cousin, and she was a Jarbo. That week, Cousin Annie was mad at the Buckmans about every little thing she could think of, because Otis's brother Greg had sat on the arm of her chair and broken it and didn't say anything about fixing it. Greg at that time was going to Monroe City courting Alma Van Marter, along with her son Earl, who was also going to Monroe City to see Lola Pearsall, whom both of them married later. Cousin Annie didn't know anything about Otis asking me for this date, as she had begun digging into the Buckmans before I got a chance to tell her. And as the week went by and Saturday evening grew near, and it was Saturday evening, and she had gone out in the garden as Cousin Will was working out there, and I knew the time had come to let her know I had a date with a Buckman. So I asked Ted if he would go to the garden and tell his mother that I had a date with Otis Buckman that evening. Ted put on his big famous smile and headed towards the garden. Very soon his mother preceded him coming back. About to burst out laughing, she said to me, "You go with him and you stick with him." I never forgot her words. Sometimes before we were married, I was so mad at him, but her words came back, "You stick with him." I did, and I was always glad I did. He wasn't always a dashing or exciting boyfriend, but he did make a wonderful husband and father. Cousin Annie, chewing the rag about the Buckmans, was only caused from a little rivalry over prosperity among the two successful farm families. But she meant no harm, as she and Cousin Will Kendrick were fine folks. In the fall of 1919, I went back to school at Holy Rosary, Monroe City. Aunt Lou and I started. Aunt Lou also started there this year, and we had rooms together. We didn't get to come home very often, just on holidays. Otis would come see me on Sunday nights and sometimes have me come to Shalbana on the train and take me to a dance either there in Shalbana or at Lakeland. At Christmas, we'd exchange small gifts. As I told earlier about taking the measles on my 18th birthday in 1920, I had a long illness. My hair came out and I was bald-headed. No wigs those days. My mother made pretty lace caps and pretty clothes for me and tried to get me in a better mood to get me to go, but I did try, but it was 6 months or so before my hair got growing and I began to recover from the melancholy mood I was left in after the long illness. The hair grew out very beautiful and curly, and I gradually perked up again and became myself. Otis was very tolerant with me during this trying time when I didn't care anything about myself or him or anything in general. I was never able to go back to school. By the time I was able to go, I thought of going to nursing school, but I had a chance to marry Otis Buckman. And on June the 28th, 1922, he brought me a diamond engagement ring. From then on until December the 30th, 1922, I was making plans to marry Otis Buckman. An unusual thing had happened during my long stay in bed, 8 or 10 weeks in 1920. I grew over 2 inches, and now I was taller than he. It bothered me, but not him. He liked tall people, and the taller I grew, the better he liked me. I was 18 and thought I had my growth and was just his height. As we danced, I watched our shadows on the wall and thought we are just the same height. I was at home until we married. My hair had grown out beautifully and was curly. I was able to do it in the latest style, a fan. In December 1922, my parents took me to Shelbina in the Surrey and bought my wedding clothes, first the hat. The latest style had just come in to the millinery shop. They had a special name then, just only hats. But only hats were sold there. The hat was such a thrill. Black satin with a whirl of monkey fur as trim, sort of droopy. $7.50, the highest price hat in the store. At Dickerson's store, we got a new material called the softest duvetyne, navy blue. Mother bought the yardage and a pattern and made the jacket, and it was trimmed with fur collar and cuffs. The skirt was sewed to a gray crepe de chine blouse, and Bernadette made Otis a shirt like my blouse. The jacket was fastened with a silver buckle. I still have it and the hat. The hat never went out of style. To this day, in 1986, I could still wear it. My shoes were black and gray trim. Petticoats had been replaced then with black satin bloomers that came down below the knee with elastic and elastic above the knee, also homemade. Under that, I wore a pink garment called a teddy suit with straps at the shoulders and a step-in type. I had red roses as a corsage. My bridesmaid, Edna Saunders, had a blue dress. Her sister Mamie had made her. She also had red roses. Otis had a new blue suit and gray tweed overcoat and new shoes, and I had a long outing flannel nightgown, and I made him get a new man's nightshirt. He thought the pullover nightshirt that his mother had made was good enough, but I told him I had never slept with anyone but girls, and that thing looked like a girl's, and he would have to look like a man with a cutaway sides and the fastening down the front with what they called frogs, with a bit of a collar. Otis had given me an all-leather black traveling bag, and it was all packed by by the wedding day. Irene Saunders Buckman had fixed our wedding breakfast, and sometime, unbeknownst to me, they had put in an outgrown pair of Norbert Terrence's booties that popped up when we opened the traveling bag at the hotel in Quincy. In those days, weddings were very early. Catholic weddings were, because we fasted from midnight before receiving the Blessed Sacrament. So ours was at 7 a.m. on Saturday, December the 30th, 1922. Bess Buckman played the organ, and Alma Buckman, they were Van Mater sisters who married Buckman brothers, Greg and Ben. Alma sang, "Oh, Promise Me." My father brought the family, but he didn't go to the wedding. Neither had he gone to Bernadette's when she married Charlie Kelly, November the 15th, 1919. He thought the weddings were sad, and he didn't care to rejoice. Aunt Lou had gone to the convent after our wedding, and Rosalie was the next when she married Lawrence Carlson in June the 16th, 1930. And Mama got Papa roped in on going to that one at Holy Rosary Church in Monroe City. All of Larry's folks, mother and father and twin brothers, were all coming down from Minneapolis, Minnesota for the wedding. Gertie said to Del, "You'll have to go to this one." Della sort of skipped out and got married in Chicago while finishing her master's degree there when she married Barney Ream. Papa went to Lillian, Kathleen, and Josephine's wedding without any persuading. Back to our December 30th, 1922 wedding. We left after the breakfast at Irene and Julius's for the depot and caught a train for Quincy, Illinois. A taxi took us to a hotel while we spent our wedding night, and we went out for supper and had halibut steak. After that, we went to a show, and during the show, a new song was sung. Toot toot tootsie, don't cry, toot toot tootsie, goodbye. If you don't get a letter, then you'll know I'm in jail. By then, the songs were beginning to get a bit wild. The next morning, we went to Sunday Mass there in Quincy. Otis had relatives there, and they saw us. They called to the hotel after we got back. We were planning to have a nice, quiet day to ourselves, but they said they were coming after us to come for dinner. We stayed there all day and all night, and the next day was New Year's Day. That night, we took the train for Hannibal and went to Mark Twain Hotel and got settled down to getting better acquainted. After all the time at Schrag's, Otis was visiting with Cousin Julius, and I was visiting with, I can't remember her name, I guess they had named Julius Buckman for Emma and Martin's Julius, because they had named Otis. They always were asking Emma and Martin to name their boy, one of them Otis. So they got tired listening to her and named the sixth boy Otis. They finally had three boys of their own to name. During the day at Hannibal, we went to see a cousin of mine, Marietta Curtis, who had married Gadsden. I forgot what his name was. The next day, we went to Otis's home where we lived until March the 12th, 1923, when we left in the wagon pulled by two white horses, Pet and Emma, our belongings to our house that Otis's father had bought from a Mr. East, 160 acres for $16,000. He had built the house had been built by Mr. Bill Hewitt in 1913 and was the first country home in Shelby County to be built all modern, furnace, lights, and water. To me, it was paradise. When I was a little girl and taking my turn to get to go to Shelbina, we would go by that beautiful house, and I would see the little Hewitt girls in the window watching us go by on the horse in Surrey. And I would think, I wish I could someday be looking out of those windows. It was a dream that came true, and I loved it. We lived right there in my dream house all the 49 years of our married life. No. That's all I got now. Tended to do that morning because they've been sowing oats, and they couldn't waste any more time only that morning to buy the furniture for the whole household. And it's on, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not...
You're telling about it. Go on. Just leave it there. Start talking.
Oh, well, I didn't know she had it on. Okay, well, Otis's father always kept a Negro a hand, and I never knew what the last name was, but at the time we married, it was Frank. And anyway, after Otis finally announced, after Mr. Buckman had bought the place for us, and it was time to get the furniture to put in it, so he could spare one morning only. They'd been sowing oats, and we would have one morning to go in and pick out the furnishings for a lifetime of to furnish the home for at least four rooms. The downstairs, there's four bedrooms upstairs and one down. I had a big heavy coat that was made out of Hudson seal plush and was so heavy on my shoulders, and within the first hour it began to get so heavy and made my shoulders ache. But first we went to a hardware store called Mr. Payne's and bought the copper clad cook stove, and by buying it he gave us a certain percent off on everything, all of our utensils. So picking out all our skillets and things we needed went with that. Then we went to Mr. Miller's furniture store to furnish the living room, dining room, and bedroom. And the rugs. So I think by then, you know, my shoulders were aching. But we must hurry along. But Otis could just glance at anything, and he knew if he wanted it or did not want it. But I would like to have had maybe 3 weeks or a month, maybe, you know, to pick this out.
3 years.
I decided on all this stuff that we were buying, but we must rush along. Had to be home by noon because something special had to be done on the farm that afternoon. No time wasted when you were a Buckman. And then we picked out the dining room suite in the bedroom suite. And I had set my heart on a little vanity dresser that just came in that had nothing but looking glasses and two little drawers about 12 by 6 inches. And I had no place to put anything else, any clothes, because that was the only thing. We just wanted to pick out a dresser. Instead of me buying a nice, great, big dresser with big drawers, I would have this little vanity dresser. And it was noon, and we closed the deal and went home. Went back to Buckman.
Buying living room furniture?
Well, we bought the rug. And the time was up then. We only had a rug. Great big rug. This big room was very huge, and got the great big rug. And then he said, the time's up, we'll go home. Time to go home. Didn't have time to. I had fooled around, I guess, maybe.
What
anyway.
What did the dining room furniture look like?
Well, the dining room was, it was walnut. And the house had an awful lot of woodwork in it and built out woodwork in the dining room. And after I got it, I found that I had made a mistake because it was oak and then this dining room was walnut. And I should have had oak. But of course, I had no time to think. I'd only had one little glance at this. We'd gone over to look at the house after Mr. Buckman had bought it, but we were not there very long. And all of them went, and the girls, and Martha and Genevieve, and we, I didn't have time to think then about it. Otis, and well, those days, they didn't haul your furniture out. You had to go in the wagon and get it yourself. So Otis and Frank went in to get it. And they didn't, it was cold. That winter, 1923, it was warm until the 1st of March. Well, this was March, this was in March, and we went to housekeeping. By that time, winter had busted in. And we didn't know how to, they didn't start the furnace. They didn't start up the furnace, had no fire in the house. And first thing they did was put the rug down, the linoleum down in the kitchen, and the rug was cold and it ripped right in front of the kitchen door, about a yard and a half back, where we walked over it for many years. And so they could get the big cook stove put in, the big copper-clad cook stove, get it set up, and get all the furniture.